Hello everybody and welcome once again to the end of the week. The best time of the week, I think. I'm Johnny Rollo, this is the Damage Report, and Brett Ehrlich is here.
It is such a great experience to be with you.
Thank you.
In real life.
Thank you.
Yesterday, John and I spent, I want to say 2 hours exploring the week 10 challenges in Fortnite, accomplishing most of them, along with my wife who's under the weather. Mm-hmm. We banded together against great adversity and accomplished things like shooting through flaming hoops.
I don't know what is going on. Last week we had a talk about this.
I felt out of body.
You said I made you be weird, but this time I did not.
I felt utterly out of body since this morning because this has been such a crazy weird week.
It has been a weird week. I'm not feeling 100% either, but we do have to give it our best because the news proceeds regardless. And so through the course of this hour, we're going to be talking about some of the fallout from William Barr. Interesting funding decisions and where money is going to go in the military budget. Donald Trump decided to get involved. It's an utter disaster. We'll give you all the details. We're going to close out the week with Burger King. Burger King just wants to make the world a better place in its own unique way. And so we'll be talking about that. And we also have two awesome guests who are going to be joining us. So in just a little bit, Imani Sawari is going to be joining us to talk about re-enfranchising former felons to be able to vote. We've been talking a lot about that issue over the past few weeks. We're going to get some expert opinion in just a little bit. And then later on, Allison Hartson is the commander of the TYT Army. She's going to be joining us to talk about what the TYT Army has been up to and how you might get involved and what you might do if you do. And so we're going to be talking about all of that. Hold on to your butts. But first, William Barr almost certainly committed perjury at various points in his testimony before the Senate a couple of days ago. And there were a couple of other areas where he sort of was very careful and skirted the line. And it wasn't necessarily immediately clear why he was being so defensive and careful in his words at the time. We now find out why. One of these examples was when he was being questioned by Senator Kamala Harris. Here is their little interaction.
Has the president or anyone at the White House ever asked or suggested that you open an investigation of anyone? Yes or no, please, sir.
The president or anybody else.
Seems you'd remember something like that and be able to tell us.
Yeah, but I'm trying to grapple with the word suggest. I mean, there have been discussions of matters out there that they have not asked me to open an investigation, but
perhaps they've suggested.
I don't know. I wouldn't say suggest.
Hinted?
I don't know.
Inferred? You don't know. Okay.
I noticed that too. Everybody says inferred when they mean implied.
Yeah, I mean
you infer things, other people don't infer things.
Correct, and that's why she should not be president. I'm just kidding.
That's number one. No, so she was great, and like I know that we always go over this. We don't need to go over this or whatever, but like, I don't want to be questioned by her ever.
Ever.
It's just rough.
It is rough. It's like when someone in a position of authority starts asking you a question and you don't, even if you don't think you've done anything wrong, you're certain they're right and you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
She's excellent at doing something that other people don't do. Mm-hmm. Other people sit there and just start making their point. So they know cameras are looking at them. They're like, which one's my camera? I'm going to complain in a way that I've crafted that I think is important to me. But she asks what seem to be very simple questions. Mm-hmm. And as a former Attorney General of California, you can tell that she is laying the groundwork for a long game that could potentially come back to bite you.
Yeah, yeah. And so he didn't want to say yes or no, really. Has the president asked him to investigate anyone? Has he put pressure on him to launch some sort of investigation? And we don't know the specifics necessarily, but there's a lot of evidence out there that that is actually the case. So Trump suggested to Fox News' Sean Hannity just last week that Barr should open an investigation into whether Clinton's campaign received help from the Ukrainian government during the 2016 election based on information allegedly gathered by the top Ukrainian prosecutor. So that's one. By the way, if that seems a little bit weird, I don't get why. That is just part of his lifelong commitment to stopping foreign governments from getting involved in US elections. That's his passion and he's pursuing it. But in any event, whatever. So he might want William Barr to investigate Hillary Clinton and her campaign for that. I could have shown you so many of these tweets, and I try not to show more than one Trump tweet if I don't have to, just because it's the worst. So here's one example of the sort of pressure he's putting publicly on William Barr or other people to start investigations. So he tweeted like 2 weeks ago, no high crimes and misdemeanors. There are no crimes by me at all. All of the crimes were committed by crooked Hillary, the Dems, the DNC, and dirty cops. And we caught them in the act. We waited for Mueller and won, so now the Dems look to Congress as last hope. So that's again, that's there's been a million tweets like that. They're the ones that committed all of the crimes, and he now has his chosen AG, who's a complete toady for him.
Right.
And so worries that he would want them to investigate, you know, Hillary Clinton, the DNC, whoever, I think are well-founded.
So yes, the attorney general is a political appointee and does act in relation to the, you know, federal code of law on behalf of the president, usually for interests like are we going to go hard after marijuana users? Mm-hmm. Those are the ways that the attorney general typically interacts with the president to emphasize or de-emphasize different aspects of the legal agenda in America. The problem with William Barr is he has been perceived to, and I would say that that interaction absolutely proves that Donald Trump is using him to act as Trump's personal lawyer,
yes,
to go after his political enemies. That is extremely frustrating. It is extremely unethical and not what attorney generals are supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing I is agree. Like, listen, with that question is like, has the president or anyone else suggested that you start an investigation? You see Barr start to like parse the words down to, you mean the president or anyone else? That's similar to what he did in his positioning around questions about whether any members of Mueller's team have expressed frustration with the way Barr handled the Mueller report and the memo. He wants to split hairs and say, I'm not specifically lying. And that is so frustrating and so enraging to me because, like, let's say I have a job. Let's say I have my normal job. If someone asks, did that work get done? And I go, what work get done? Did they help you with that work? Did they help me? No, we just want to know if something happened. Yeah. I don't want you to answer it specifically. I'd get fired from my job if something terrible like this happened and I answered it by trying to like specifically place blame on one person or another or split hairs, because the through line is Trump is asking William Barr to go after his political enemies the way he's used the traditionally like sacred aspects of American government to go after his political enemies as opposed to protecting what this country stands for.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's also, I mean, look, he's been tweeting constantly about how they need to be looking into Joe Biden and everything. Coincidentally, all of a sudden he's interested in investigating Joe Biden.
That's some dictator stuff, man.
Exactly. So just, you know, get ready for that. And I agree. He both was splitting hairs, but he's quite unflappable, you know, when he's testifying. He doesn't seem to care about what's being done to his reputation, how he's shredding it. He doesn't seem to care that he is, you know, blatantly just serving the interests of Trump in the White House there. He's come to grips with that. He was, I would say, unflappable. I would also say he might actually end up testifying before the House at some point if they go hard, which I doubt they will. We also know, by the way, that there's a good chance now that Robert Mueller might testify too. When that happens, it's almost certainly the case that TYT will be doing live commentary of it. You're going to want to see that. And so go to tyt.com/John to become a member today. And with that, why don't we turn to another topic? So we know that military spending in the US is completely out of control. You might assume that because we're spending more than virtually every other, you know, advanced country combined, we'd be able to cover all of our bases. But that's not actually the case. Even with a more than $700 billion a year military budget, you do still have to make choices. And Donald Trump is getting involved in those choices in a way that is, I would say, destructive in at least two different ways. And so this has to do with one particular allocation of funds. He wants to take, he's not saying the amount, but it's going to end up being about $20 billion to keep this USS Harry S. Truman afloat. And so he tweeted, I am overriding the decommission order of the magnificent aircraft carrier Harry S. Truman, built in 1998, fairly new, and considered one of the largest and finest in the world. It will be updated at a fraction of the cost of a new one, which also are being built.
What?
Just super fast. The stream of consciousness is bewildering sometimes because he's saying we should keep these afloat rather than building new ones because this is cheap and this is crazy expensive. So we're doing this. We're also doing this. We're doing everything. Don't worry. We're doing everything. We're wasting money as I just described. Anyway, that $20 billion could have gone for something else. And it turns out that the Navy had a pretty clear idea of what they wanted to spend that money on. So they were going to use it for new unmanned vessels and other advanced technologies. And in particular, in the area of cybersecurity, which is an area that the Navy is worried about, the military more generally is worried about, we as a country are worried about. There seems to be basically just one person in America that is not worried about that. And it is Donald Trump, who gets to unilaterally make these sorts of decisions. So I just want to read a little bit in brief a report from March that went to the Secretary of the Navy about what their priorities should be. So it says, in prior eras, for good or ill, navies shifted their definition from wood to steel to wing, or from sail to steam and beyond. This time, technology, not the naval service or its opponents, have imposed a definition of what navies will be for the rest of the 21st century. Navies must become information enterprises who happen to operate on, over, under, and from the sea, a vast difference from a 355 ship mindset. We find the Department of the Navy preparing to win some future kinetic battle while it is losing the current global counterforce, countervalue cyber war. That was before he decided to take $20 billion that could have gone towards these sorts of preparations and instead put it towards a boat.
Yes, but I get it. Like, I get it. Mm-hmm. This is one of those, exactly, this is exactly who our president is. He could use this money to do what you need to do, mm-hmm. but he'd rather build something bright, shiny, and new, or something that is utterly a symbolic act of revitalizing the Harry S. Truman ship. Mm-hmm. And it's very frustrating. And I'm sure that if he was asked to go down and go through line item by line item on the kinds of expenses that go into fixing up this ship, he would say, just do the cosmetic in fixes on the outside.
Yeah.
I remember when he had
gold.
Trump Airlines, Edwin was in here, Edwin who worked in the aviation industry for a while. He said that the 727s they used for Trump Airlines were notoriously bad ships or airplanes that had not been used.
Horrible ships too.
Horrible ships. But like they were classified as dangerous. They had stopped manufacturing them. And those specific ones were the older models of these things that had they tried to fix with newer models, but then discontinued because Trump doesn't care about the functional aspects of anything. Yeah. He only cares about the cosmetic and marketing aspects of everything.
Yeah.
He has been putting lipstick on pigs since he was born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least he's... Well, I'm not going to go there. I was going to say something. I'm not going
to
go there.
And he loves them. But he makes love to them. Is that what you're saying, John?
No,
that's disgusting that you would take that and warp it that way.
That's not where I was going to go.
You're putting words in my mouth.
But I will say, look, we can talk about the different priorities and everything. I assume that you're probably on the side of we should be prepared for information warfare and things like that. And we're not surprised by this. Obviously, he has taken resources away from other parts of the federal government that were supposed to go towards election security. And I don't know if it's just he feels that if he were to take it seriously, if he were to allocate money to it, it would, you know, play into what he sees as a negative narrative of how he got in office in the first place, that he needs to downplay it. But this isn't just fun and games. This isn't just, you know, line items on a budget request or anything like that. We're talking about future threats to our Navy. We're talking about future threats to our election systems. This is serious. This isn't just a 2016 thing. I know some people are like, move on. No, it's going to continue in the future. And he is doing everything he can in his uniquely positioned position to make sure that we are not ready for it. And that is significant for our military and for future elections as well. Okay, with that, we're going to take a short break. We come back more on voting after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called The Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of The Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Recently, as a country, we've been having a bit of a debate about how exactly we should go about, and if we should go about, re-enfranchising those who had served their time in prison and giving them back the right to vote, with some presidential candidates coming out in support of it, others saying we should have a conversation, some staying very much silent on the topic. And joining us now to talk about this is Right to Vote campaign national coordinator, Imani Sawari. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Very glad to have you here. So you recently wrote an open letter to presidential candidates on voting rights, which I very much enjoyed. For those who haven't read it yet, could you explain what the case you were making was?
So the open letter is co-signed by over 70 organizations across the nation. And what we are asking is for presidential candidates to come out on their stance in favor or not in favor of restoring people's voting rights that have been impacted by incarceration. So that includes those in community custody, on probation and parole, and those who are currently incarcerated.
Okay, so I'm very glad that you described it that way, because I have to admit that while I've been talking about this a lot on this show, even I have generally restricted my commentary to, you know, referencing the people that are currently in prison. But as you point out, the population is actually larger than that. And we are talking about literally millions of people across the country. So I want to get into the argument that you're making for why they should have the right to vote. But before we get into that, because you were talking about the presidential candidates, who has actually made clear where they stand on this so far, and who are we still waiting for?
So right now, there are three candidates who have come out in favor, and that's Adam Kokesh of the Libertarian Party, as well as Andrew Yang and Bernie Sanders. They've all said that they are in favor of restoring voting rights for those who are on probation, parole, and incarcerated. The rest of the candidates have not made a clear stance on where they stand. Candidate Cory Booker has diverted the question. Kamala Harris has said that she is up for discussion about restoring those who are on probation and parole. But for those candidates who haven't come out, they have not yet said whether they are in favor or not.
You know, and I wonder, I guess it, on some level, I don't necessarily envy the task ahead of you in trying to get them all on the record when, I mean, I saw what the sort of like on, you know, CNN and all that, the conversation that was had after Bernie Sanders was talking about this, you know, The View, they were like viciously attacking him for coming out with a position on it. And so I wonder if other candidates have been disincentivized from actually making clear what they think about this topic.
That could be the case. I also think because it's such a dividing topic in our country, that might be one reason why they don't want to come out in favor so early. But I would really be hesitant to vote for any candidate that did not support expanding our democracy to include everyone. In the United States, our democracy has never included everyone. Mm-hmm. There's never been a point in time in our history where everyone that was a citizen could vote. So I would really urge candidates to not be hesitant about this issue and to come out in favor of expanding the number of people who can participate in the political processes that govern their lives.
So I believe it was in the letter that you talked about how the current system of how we decide who gets to vote and who still doesn't get to vote is effectively an extension of Jim Crow. Could you explain that argument for us?
Yes. So during right after the slave era and during the Jim Crow era, the people who were considered slaves now had to be given a new term because the term slave was taboo. And so that new term was criminal or convict. So we were able to disenfranchise black people just by giving them this new label of being a criminal. And then all of the rights that did not apply to slaves suddenly did not apply to criminals. So we take those rights away from people because of their status. And so when we assign a new slave status, and this is a new slave status, our Constitution has labeled people who are being prosecuted for a crime as slaves in the 13th Amendment with our exception clause. Slavery is still going on. That allows for the people who are prosecuted to be treated as such, to be treated as slaves, to not have the right to vote, to not have the freedom of movement, to not be able to participate in political conversations or be around their family. So we think that there are certain rights that a person should have as a citizen, especially if they are being affected by the laws, that they should be able to participate in voting. There is nothing that says that someone who is not participating in voting would be able to reform better or that they would have a lower recidivism rate because they're not participating in voting. Actually, Initiate Justice just came out with a report. They launched a report this past March, I believe it was the 6th, that says that democracy needs needs everyone, and it has statistics on the facts that if people are participating in democracy, if they're educating themselves civically, then that they're more inclined in coming back into society and being better citizens. And so we want to give people that option of participating in democracy. We want them to feel like they belong in our society, and that's one step in doing so. And then we also want them to have a voice and have ownership over changing their environments, over bringing in programs and having a voice in the legislation that could make a better environment for them.
And that certainly makes sense. The most divisive aspect of this conversation seems to be, over the past few weeks at the very least, people generally outside of like Republican governors in the South seem to think that being able to vote once you leave prison makes perfect sense. Although in a lot of states you still cannot, there's a lot of obstacles are set up to stop you from doing that. But the topic of voting while you are in prison tends to meet, like you can start that conversation and within 20 seconds you're talking about the Boston bomber, you're talking about Kaczynski and stuff like that. What would you say to people who are uncomfortable with the idea that people still serving their sentence should be allowed to vote, including possibly domestic terrorists, killers, the examples that come up when this topic starts?
I think it's exciting that a lot of people have been able to get over the idea that people who have served their time and who are out in society are able to vote. And I think that we've gotten over that idea because people on the inside have been fighting so hard for their voting rights. We need to raise the bar for everyone, and that includes people on the inside. The Boston bomber and domestic terrorists represent a very small portion of the people who are locked up today. A lot of people who are locked up today are people who had drug crimes, people who are offenders because they were sufferers of trauma in their childhood, because their parents were incarcerated. These are cycles that affect families that are in poverty. A lot of the people who are inside did not ever see a bomb or know how to make bombs. So the fact that there's this one idea of who a criminal is that's really stereotyping all people who are behind bars, this is something that they suffer from often. We pick one person to represent the entire majority of the population, and then we silence and dismiss all others. So we need to think and expand our perspective of who people on the inside are. They are our fathers, our mothers, our sisters and brothers. They are people who are being affected by policy. They want a voice in the policies that affect their children and their spouses and their loved ones. They want to be able to be involved in society and shaping society and trying to shape the world for the people that they love. So this is not just domestic terrorists. It's not just murderers, though it does include those folks. It more massively includes folks that are in for crimes that we're not even talking about, like drug offenses, running away in their childhood, just cycles of poverty that have affected them. And we want to hear their voice because we want society to be better for everyone, including people who have suffered from trauma and are in prison because they're still dealing with those traumatic pasts.
Amani Sawari, Right to Vote campaign national coordinator, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, lots more to get to. I want to turn now to a case of supreme injustice in the sports world, and it has to do with Caster Semenya, a South African long distance runner. 800 meters seems long distance to me. I'm actually not 100% sure.
800 meters.
That seems like a long
way. Longer than I've ever run, if that helps.
Yeah, me too. But look, I want to talk about a court that ruling that obviously very specifically impacts this particular case, but is also scary for its implications outside of it. So on Wednesday, the Court of Arbitration for Sport denied Caster Semenya's appeal against an International Association of Athletics Federation's rule that would prevent her from competing at the highest level of track. The rule limits the testosterone levels of competitors in women's track events and will require Semenya to take medically unnecessary drugs in order to compete. So this is not a story that I have followed for a long time. I don't follow sports very closely. However, going back for about a decade now, there have been people who have been taking issue with her performance and attacking her in a variety of ways, which we're going to cover. But now it has come to the point where people are saying for her to continue to participate in a sport that she has done extremely well in, winning multiple Olympic medals and all of that, she needs to artificially change her body to comply with their idea of what a woman's chemical makeup should be.
Right. I was just Googling on Roger's thesaurus, antonyms for enhancement. Mm-hmm. Because there are laws against, or rules and regulations against performance enhancing drugs.
Yeah.
She will take performance diminishing drugs.
Yes.
Which is ridiculous. It is just so, like, Usain Bolt is a crazy fast guy. Mm-hmm. Much faster than literally every other dude. Mm-hmm. And every other dude, you know what they have to do when facing a superior athlete?
File a court case.
File a court case, yes. 100%. Or wait till he gets old. Mm-hmm. Why is, and that's what happens with once in a generation athletes. You sit back, you enjoy it, you marvel at the amazing achievements of these individuals mm-hmm. who are making sports what they are meant to be, the crowning achievements of human endeavors, mm-hmm. physically anyway. And then after they get old, someone else comes back and tries to break that record. Why is that not enough?
Yeah, or just work much, much harder.
And I'm not gonna do that.
Okay, just wait a couple decades. So here's the issue, and we're gonna show you some more details and everything. The issue seems to be that people, like whether it's people who are adjudicating this, some of the former competitors who've taken issue with Caster Semenya, random people on the internet. I know that it is inconvenient for you to, like you want this person to be ruled to be not a woman. Sorry, Caster Semenya is a woman. It doesn't matter if the testosterone that her body produces is higher than most women's. That's still her body, a women's body that is doing that. And it leads to some really ridiculous, like statements, for instance, from the International Association of Athletics Federations, which said that this rule is justified because it wants to create a quote level playing field and ensure that success is determined by talent, dedication, hard work, and the other values and characteristics that the sport embodies and celebrates.
And to do that,
nonsense.
We are going to take every basketball player over 7 feet and just start sanding down their heels.
Shave them down.
Just because that is not level. Mm-hmm. We need everyone to be the same height. Now, they do that for boxing. Mm-hmm. They do weight classes.
Yes.
But some people have longer arms. You gotta deal with it. Yeah. You're not gonna only have people box. Basically, what they're saying is like, we need everyone who races to run the same speed and we'll see who's faster.
Exactly.
Right?
And here's the thing, like, okay, so you mentioned the weight classes, but obviously certain boxers have certain physical advantages over others. That are entirely disconnected from our conception of talent. I had to do research on this because it's not something I've been aware of. Michael Phelps, great swimmer, right? Turns out it's not just because he practiced a lot. He has double jointed ankles, which helps, and his body also naturally produces less lactic acid. So I think, to be fair, every time he races, they should get a big bucket of lactic acid and start pumping his muscles full of it.
I think
if we want a level playing field,
he needs a camelback and as he's of milkshake. He needs a milkshake in his camelback and he's swimming and he goes here for air and then he goes here for milkshake.
That seems fair.
And that's the only way that in the spirit of, I don't know, Mount Olympus or whatever the Olympics is based on, we can achieve this goal. What's most frustrating to me is watching the individual people who are passing these judgments.
Yeah.
Who are not athletic, who've never participated.
Almost all men.
These all also. Dudes just are like, I think this is weird.
Yeah.
We are going to stop it.
Exactly. And this is just the latest iteration of this. In the past, there had to be invasive tests to make sure that she was actually a woman because people refused to actually believe it. She passed those tests. So then they had to come up with something else. The amount of testosterone that they believe is the cutoff point that they will allow has been manipulated at multiple points to very carefully target this particular athlete.
Right.
And I want to cover two other aspects of this. One, I just thought it was very interesting. I saw that Madeline Pope is another runner that had previously been beaten by Caster Semenya and had taken issue with it. But then in the end, after doing some research, she wrote this. I encountered the vast literature written by advocates of women's sport who opposed the exclusion of women athletes with naturally high testosterone for both scientific and ethical reasons. Scientifically, because biological sex and athletic ability are both far too complex for scientists to reduce to measures of testosterone. And ethically, because these regulatory efforts have always been characterized by considerable harm to the women athletes singled out for testing, which is 100% true. Great evolution on that topic by Madeline Pope. It is. It's targeting the women, but also we can't take race out of this as well. I mean, this is a South African runner. who's been attacked not just for testosterone, but also her physical appearance for years and years and years. There are many other examples of this across sport where people feel like there's some sort of natural biological advantage that can't be allowed. And then even farther than that, look at the ways that in recent days, some people have tried to pitch this conversation. So Parker Malloy is a friend of the show. She tweeted this, Fox News is referring to her as a transgender runner. And you can see the screenshot there, transgender runner loses court appeal. Caster Semenya is not transgender. Caster Semenya is a woman whose body produces testosterone. That should not be a concept that is so difficult to understand. We get that some people produce less testosterone. That's what all those advertisements are meant to correct, right?
On Fox News.
Exactly.
For you having low T. And this from a network that is also like, what we only care about your biological gender or sex at birth, which in a utterly dehumanizing, horrible practice, they were like, we got to check. Can we see? That's it.
Yeah.
And guess what? She passed your already stupid test. Mm-hmm. The only reason you're trying to classify her as transgender is because you artificially set the testosterone level to rule her out.
Yeah.
Which undercuts every other argument they make about gender on that network.
The entire thing is incredibly unjust. Hopefully this is not the last word on it, but a very depressing ruling there. Okay, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, the TYT Army, how can you get involved? We'll show you after this. There's a lot of misinformation out there, and it is not going to correct itself. You might need to get involved, and we've got a great way that you can potentially do that. Joining us now to help break it down, Allison Hartson, director of the TYT Army. Allison, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. So for people who might not know, TYT Army, what is it all about?
We are, well, TYT Army has actually been around for years, supporters of objective journalism as opposed to neutral journalism, supporters of independent media, so obviously the TYT network. But the difference now is that we're coming together to organize and to strategize, because I think that's what the left is missing. If we can get together and not allow the establishment to really intimidate us into submission, then we can in fact get the policies passed that we need, get the right candidates into office that we need, more AOCs, more Bernies. And so we are figuring out how to do that together by tackling the misinformation, the disinformation, the propaganda that floats all around media, whether it's online or on television and print.
So what are some examples of misinformation that the TYT Army has been deployed to combat in recent months?
Well, the most recent one was a Representative Moulton, who just announced his candidacy for president. He is from Massachusetts, and he compared the VA to Medicare for All single payer, which is incorrect. And so we took that and we researched it in order to make sure that we have that it is well researched, that we are being objective in our conclusions, and determined that he is in fact making false statements and spreading misinformation, which obviously affects whether or not we get Medicare for All passed. So we took that on. Another one that happened also around Medicare for All, because that's been a big one in this last month since the congressional hearing this week on Tuesday, I believe it was. Another one was whether or not unions support Medicare for All. And we found that, in fact, over 600 unions have come out and publicly supported Medicare for All. And I think it's something like 22 international unions, including SEIU, AFL-CIO. Our own volunteers at the TYT Army didn't even know this. I didn't know this. And so these are the kinds of things that we are uncovering. We've done the Green New Deal. Just yesterday, we put out a statement about Politico that attempted to do a smear job on The Intercept. And in our opinion, from looking at the article itself, they actually ended up proving that The Intercept is objective and transparent. So we're taking on all kinds of things.
So let's say a person gets involved. They have, you know, certain topics that they're particularly interested in. Obviously, I mean, you listed a whole bunch of different types of misinformation that you're fighting. There's a lot to weed through on a daily basis. How do you go about actually applying a filter to that? How do you decide what it is that the army is going to be deployed against on any given day or any given week?
this is where anybody can get involved. So you don't have to be, you know, rolling up your sleeves and digging in if you don't have, don't feel that you have the time right now to help us do the research and create the products, the fact sheets, the graphics, the videos, et cetera. So anybody can send us media bias or propaganda that you find and just go to our website, tyt.com/army. I'm sure you probably have it on the screen somewhere or well, but go there, send us whatever you identify. That helps us because going out there and making sure that we're keeping an eye on all journalists and all platforms is obviously challenging. So we really rely on you to do that. That comes to us and the volunteers who are working to produce these stories and you know, debunk essentially and help inform people. We start by vetting these stories that are sent to us. And so we vet them in order to determine whether there really is bias or propaganda. And then that gets sent to our research team. And our research team obviously is looking into making sure that we are being objective and evidence-based in our conclusions. And then that gets sent to a team of volunteers who put together fact sheets, graphics, videos, articles. And then finally, we have a team of people who are helping us to network and build a coalition of supporters and reaching out to not just other progressive organizations, but also to legislators and to influencers and to media to help make sure that the stories that we are producing are going even outside of the TYT universe, because that is in fact what we need in order to be successful, especially in preparation for 2020.
So, you know, obviously you've got your work cut out for you already. I mean, there's so much misinformation and all that. We're obviously in the beginning months of the Democratic primary. Do you have a plan for how the Army is going to deal with false claims that might come up? For instance, during the debates, there's going to be so many people, so many debates, all of that. What's the plan?
That is where we need everybody's help, all hands on deck. But the plan right now that we're working on is building a profile, if you will, of all of the viable presidential candidates. One side note that we found through our research is there's something like over 500 presidential candidates mm-hmm. who have filed. So we're looking at the viable candidates and creating a profile so that we can debunk the misinformation that comes out on those candidates. And then also polling. Polling is something that we are constantly dealing with as well. And whether or not the poll is in fact reliable. And so we take those and research their methodology, et cetera. And then as far as the debates and the policies that they're talking about during these debates, we are researching, like we produce what we call our foundational research of each topic. So whether it's in healthcare with Medicare for All single payer or other options, or whether it's the Green New Deal with the environment, taxes with the economy, et cetera. And so when that's why we're planning right now so that we can be ready once those debates really start to take shape in 2020 so that we are ready to go out there and be able to respond in real time. And I want to say that one of the things that really makes the TYT Army different from your typical like fact-checking organization is that we are taking action. So we're not just fact-checking and then putting it on our website for people to come to us. Mm-hmm. We are pushing that information out there in order to make sure that people have access to it so that the viewers of Rachel Maddow's show, when she goes and tries to smear Bernie and lie about this poll that she just was talking about just this week, that her viewers are hearing from us about the facts. And so that's what we plan to do for the debates as well coming up.
Okay, well, if there's a way that the damage report can help out in signal boosting some of these findings, feel free to let us know here. Allison Hartson, director of the TYT Army, thank you once again.
Thanks, John.
We're gonna take a short break here. When we come back, Burger King wants to help with your mental health. We'll evaluate their efforts after this. So it's become a thing recently where big corporations want to get involved in social issues and it doesn't always work. Now Burger King is here. They want to help out with your mental health. We're going to evaluate their efforts. Here's a bit of a commercial they released.
I can't believe my student loan. I'm never moving out of my parents' home.
Just got ghosted. Should have known. Pretty sure I'll end up alone.
They say I'm too young to raise my baby girl, Take your opinions and suck it, world.
Okay, so there you saw at the end, obviously they have their little song, they're acknowledging that people aren't always happy, which is certainly true. I knew about that before Burger commercial told me, but anyway, but okay, fine, it's a big
years.
Thing. We don't talk about it enough as a country, I get that. So they're offering now the pissed meal, the blue meal, the salty meal, which I think is everything on the menu actually.
Hello. Oh,
the yas meal, which is a mood now, and then the DGAF meal. Which before the show we were arguing was the mood that leads to going to Burger King in the first place.
DGAF
meal. Not just Burger King, any of them. And so, I don't know, what do you think?
Get over yourself.
What do you mean?
This is great.
Is it great?
Here's the worst part. Mm-hmm. Is McDonald's saying that it's a happy meal? Like,
it makes
the
kids
idea,
happy.
Like, and come by happy. I don't know, remember if that's like open enjoyment. Drink happiness is, I think, Coca-Cola's motto. Mm. That's weird and
yes,
toxic.
I agree.
Going after this, which is a way to, because it's not just that May. It's not just that May is the month of mental health. It's the month of destigmatizing mental health. So it's getting you to open up and talk about these kinds of things in a way that essentially says, like, listen, people take medication to assure their mental health, and that's okay. Stop stigmatizing it. Just talk about it. It's fine. Mm-hmm. This is a way of doing that. And then, yes, everyone can take a commercial done by some kind of big organization, big corporation, and then say, this is bad. They're just trying to make money. Fine, do it. I don't care. I don't have time for you.
Mm-hmm.
This is okay.
Okay.
Well, you're wrong is what I'm trying to say.
I haven't even said anything. I've said almost nothing.
All right, so what do you think?
I'm 100% down for destigmatizing virtually everything, including mental health. That's why I talk about how stressed I am. Literally, I make the beginnings of a lot of interviews awkward by admitting how stressed I am and all of that. It happens. And look, if Burger King wants to do that, okay. I think that they undercut your comparison between them and the Happy Meal with their yas meal, which is not really about mental health. It's more about just enthusiasm.
No one's ever finished a Whopper and gone, yas.
Yeah.
They go, there's a problem in my ass.
It's like how Jim Gaffigan says, IHOP. I never left IHOP thinking about that. I feel like hopping. But anyway, look, okay. I'm going to try not to. My knee-jerk reaction is like, if you want people to feel better, more satisfied, less stressed, all of that. Now, some of that is just internal to the brain. It's a hormonal thing. It's chemical. Yes, that is not necessarily, strictly speaking, determined by external circumstances. But almost every corporation, including wealthy ones like a lot of the fast food companies, could pay their employees better, provide more benefits and all of that. There's a lot of things that they could do. And that we as a country could do that would produce a less stressful environment, if nothing else, from any of these people. Now, I know that that's not solely on the backs of Burger King, but they do, like, this campaign is not just good times for talking about mental health. It's a campaign strategy for them. They want to get something from this as well. And so I can assess it.
Yeah, that's more.
No.
So the instinct to do that online contributes to the toxic environment online. And it's my contention that you can express all these feelings and they're all fine and they're all right. And that's the hashtag feel your way thrust, which is I can say, oh, wow. I mean, this is something I was saying and Brooke mentioned, someone already tweeted it, which is like my life, which is like every meal at Burger King is the DGAF meal, like don't give an F meal.
Okay.
You know, if they wanted to make real meals, they'd call them diarrhea boxes. Like you can do that, or you can say, how come they don't make people's lives better by paying them a living wage? Like you can do all that stuff, but at the very least, Let's at least have one moment where we come together and say, it's nice that someone's saying you can feel your way.
Yes, and we will We will bow down enthusiastically to our corporate overlords.
I'm going to go to Burger
I get what you're
right
saying.
Now.
Okay, fine. Okay, let us know what you think. Anyway, Brett, thank you for helping close out the week.
Happy half hour today.
Yes.
Young Turks.
Destigmatizing the foot fetish, actually, the last week.
Yeah,
last
I'll week. Take my shoes
I'll go take a look at that. Thank you, everybody. We will see you on Monday. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.